Hello and welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher. I'm in conversation with Christina O'Connell, a clinical psychologist at the Resilience Centre, on raising children forget self-esteem. Let's develop self-efficacy and EQ. Yep, forget the self-esteem thing. A pretty provocative title, because aren't parents supposed to be forever nurturing, encouraging and building up the self-esteem of their kids?
Well, whenever we think about building up a child's self-esteem, what do we picture? Oh, you're such a great kid, you're so talented, you're so smart. And we're forever telling them that their horrible piece of art is fantastic and we're going to put it on the fridge. And, you know, you see this in more extreme ways as well. Say you have a high school student and they're doing okay at school. And then all of a sudden you hear the parents saying, yes, you could totally be a magistrate or whatever you want. You could be prime minister. And, you know, we're creating all of these images of you can do anything, that the sky's the limit. The reality is that we're, in most cases, setting them up for failure. I read an article not long ago that gave a beautiful equation. How much it's based in research, I'm not sure, but this person was saying that happiness equals expectations minus reality.
That's nice. I like that. Here's the problem, though. In this era of positive psychology, it sounds not very positive to backtrack from the affirming this beautiful young child.
See, it's interesting. I think it's all to do with where you're putting the emphasis. So when you put the emphasis on outcomes versus putting the emphasis on effort, that's what makes such a big difference.
Okay, right.
So, oh, you want to become a medical doctor? That's great. You know that's going to take an awful lot of work. That's going to mean you're going to have to sacrifice weekends. And, you know, we could talk about tutoring if that's something that you wanted, as opposed to, yeah, of course you become
a
medical doctor.
Anything
you want. You could just wake up tomorrow and you can become a medical doctor. But it's more about, and that's why I've said in the title, like, let's not focus so much on self-esteem. Let's not create these little narcissists who think that the whole world revolves around them because they are pure perfection.
Yes.
But rather, let's focus on self-efficacy.
Okay. What's that? What's the difference? What's it going to look like, Christine?
So self-efficacy is the belief in their ability and capacity. Albert Bandura said that this is what influences how we approach goals, how we approach tasks, and how we take on challenges. It's the self-belief that we have in our ability to do things, to achieve things. That's what self-efficacy is about. So if I give an example, I have a little toddler. And he's trying to climb different things at the park. And sometimes it's quite dangerous. And I can easily save him or I can pick him up and take him to the top on my own. But what I like to do is stand behind him. And when he gets frustrated, that's brilliant because I'm training the part of the brain that works on persistence. I want him to be persistent. I don't want him to give up. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes.
So I'll say things to him, like, he's only little, so how much he understands, I'm not sure. But still, I say things to him like, you can do it. Try again. Oh, I can see you're trying really hard. Look, concentrating. You're really concentrating. Mm. As opposed to, good boy, good boy. That's such a full stop. They don't really know what that means. You're either good or you're bad. It's labeling, and rather focusing on the action in the moment and encouraging him around the effort as opposed to outcome.
Are we talking a bit about confidence?
Yes.
Emotional confidence and strength.
Yes, exactly. And emotional confidence is an interesting thing because John Gottman, who is the emotion coaching guru, he looks at how we can coach kids through their emotional world. How can we give them the skills to navigate and negotiate their emotional world, their social world? And as parents, it's not our role to fix the world for them or fix the problems for them, but rather to give them the skills and to coach them through and navigate them through that process. So for example, if you have a little one come home, say primary school, I'm picturing a little girl, she comes home and she says, Mommy, I had a big fight with my friend and we had a big argument and now I don't know if we're going to be friends anymore, and she's in an absolute emotional mess. A really quick and easy response would be...
Get over it.
Get over it.
That's what a dad would say. No, that's not true.
She'll be right. She'll be right.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine tomorrow. Yeah. You'll just show up to school tomorrow and everyone would have forgotten about it because you're seven, right? You know, this is kind of...
It's a quick, cute, easy answer.
Yes.
It's part of what comes from us too.
Exactly.
Where we are.
It's what a lot of adults do because they're time poor.
Yes.
And in this time poor world, we try to solve the problem in a very quick band-aid way. But the reality is that if we're doing emotion coaching, if we're actually using it as a teachable moment, which is what it is,
yes,
rather than telling the young person what to do in this situation, we would ask questions like, okay, so explain what happened with your friend Veronica or whatever her name is. Explain what Veronica said, and then what did you say? And then what did she say? And then where were your other friends? Were they all watching or were they somewhere else? And then once you get an idea of what the picture looks like, you can then say, ah, okay, so how did you feel in that? And you talk about the feelings. Well, she was really mean, so I felt so upset and I was just crying and I couldn't stop crying. And, you know, she's really relaying this in this beautiful way that little girls do. And then you can ask them questions like, so what do you think you might do tomorrow when you get to school? What's your plan? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. Well, why don't we come up with a few ideas? Some really silly ideas, some funny ideas, some good ideas. And then we can talk about it together and we can work out which one you might try.
But that takes a lot more time than the quick kind of expedient answer. It's a real issue for parents though, isn't it?
It's horrible because adults are in such, especially, I don't know, living in Sydney, it's such an expensive city and mortgages are going up and up and school costs are going up and up and it costs a lot of money in this city and we need to work and we need to work long hours and we have less and less time to put into raising our kids. And you know what? It's not about giving up work to put 100% time into our kids. It's about in those teachable moments, we need to stop, we need to pause and go, this is the stuff that matters. When they are emotionally charged and we can coach them through it, we are teaching them an incredible skill. EQ is one of the biggest predictors of successful outcomes in the workforce.
Which for the uninitiated is?
Emotional intelligence. So a lot of people talk about IQ, which is our intellectual ability, but EQ, emotional intelligence, plays a massive role when it comes to success in the workplace, but also success in relationships. In fact, I just recently read an article put out by the Gottman Institute, John Gottman's stuff, and it said the number one predictor for successful outcomes in marriage is for the man to have high EQ.
Really? That's worth another podcast, I reckon.
Yes, anyway, we only have time for so much. Yes.
You're listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm in conversation with clinical psychologist Christina O'Connell. So how do you build emotionally intelligent and emotionally confident people? Christina has five recommendations.
Number one. So this is according to John Gottman.
Yep.
And he is the guru in emotion coaching. There are five steps. So if you're not writing this down, write it down. And if you are writing this down, write it down.
Here's my pen.
Number one, you need to be aware of emotions first. So Gottman's study shows that for parents to feel what their children are feeling, they must first be aware of emotions in themselves. And only once they're aware of their own emotions can they then become truly aware of the emotions in their children. You're in a public place and your kid's doing something that's really socially frowned upon. All of a sudden, your own shame and anxiety in front of everyone else is coming to the surface. And you're very aware of how you're being perceived by the other adults as a result of your child behaving the way they're behaving. Mm. So if your anxiety is going up, no doubt your kid is picking up on this. And if your child is trying to manipulate you into doing something that they want, they'll use that.
Shocking little individual.
I know. They're very smart, very young.
Okay, be aware of your emotions. That's number one. Number two.
Number two, recognizing the emotion as an opportunity for intimacy and teaching. This is your opportunity for real emotional connection with your child.
And take the time.
You need the time to do that, don't you? And so whenever you have an opportunity, whenever your child is opening up to you about their emotions, that is where you can truly build a bond with them. And if you want to have a connection with your child beyond the age of 18, then this is where you're going to do it.
Mm.
So recognizing that this is a situation where you can build intimacy and you can, it's a teachable moment.
Okay. Number three, what's number three?
Number three, listening empathically and validating the child's feelings. Listening empathically and validating the child's feelings. So this basically means that we're not shaming the feeling, we're not dismissing the feeling, invalidating it, or minimizing it. We all have different emotions. It's okay to feel angry sometimes. It's okay to feel sad sometimes. It's okay to be fearful. This is what makes us human beings,
sure,
and not robots.
Sure.
And so quickly we can invalidate it and go, oh, I'm sure it's not that bad.
When it is.
It is that bad.
I'm just telling you.
And you know what? Maybe from an adult's eyes it's not that bad, but as a little human, it's a big deal.
That's very wise, yeah.
Poor little humans. It's all about empathy. That's what emotion coaching is about, is
okay.
Empathy.
Yeah.
So number four, helping the child verbally label the emotions. So really, children need to build the language. It takes a bit of time to build the language. When a little one is frustrated, so use the example of a toddler, you can sit there and say, you're really angry, aren't you? Because mommy didn't give you the bread. Mommy said, no, you've had enough bread. You're really angry. You're really frustrated. I can see that. It gives them emotional language, and it removes power in the emotion when you're able to label it and pinpoint what's going on for you.
Yes.
Later, when they're older, you start to distinguish between anger, frustration, irritation. So you're trying to build up their emotional language vocabulary.
Okay.
With a teenager, you want to really mirror that behavior. So if they storm in the house and they run upstairs and they're frustrated, they've had a horrible day and they're slamming their books down on the floor, if we respond as an angry parent, then we're just going to be adding fuel to the fire. But rather, we could say something like, wow, you are really pissed off today. Something awful must have happened at school, or what happened to you? Do you need to talk about it? Should we talk about it later? I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because, you know, you might get the door slammed in your face. But if they've been trained emotionally from childhood, that kind of door is open.
Exactly. And if you've been building that emotional connection since childhood, it's a much easier to maintain it.
Yes.
Number five. So far we have been aware of our own emotions. We've recognized that emotions are an opportunity for intimacy and teaching.
Yep.
We've listened empathically and validated the child's feelings. We're helping the child to verbally label the emotion. So number five, the final point and very important one, is setting limits while helping the child to problem solve. So we've worked out what the emotion is. We've worked out how big it is. We've acknowledged it. We've validated it. Now, what do we do with it? And that's where we provide the scaffolding as parents. We encourage them to come up with ideas. Okay, so what might help you right now? Do you need time on your own? Do you think time alone would help? Or would you rather tell me all about it and we can get frustrated together about what happened?
Okay.
Or do you want to just have dinner, sleep on it, and we'll talk about it tomorrow when you're feeling a bit better? Like, what has helped you in the past?
Yeah.
Do you want to go for a run? Do you want to go for a swim? And I wouldn't really be making the suggestions unless I absolutely had to. I'd rather be asking the questions. What have you tried before? What was helpful? Do you remember what you did last time you felt this angry? That kind of thing.
Doesn't mean that the child just sits there and wallows in their own misery.
No, that's often the parent's concern. Like the parent,
maybe it's often what the parent does. Anyhow, that's another one.
Like the parents will often say, oh, you know, we all have bad days. I'm sure it'll be fine. You'll feel better in the morning. Just sleep on it. It'll be fine. So what that's teaching is suppress.
Denial,
exactly. And what a mixed message that we're sending to our kids, especially when they're really little. If we say, oh, you'll be fine. Well, if it's fine to feel this angry, then there's nothing I need to do about it. If it's fine for me to feel this sad, then there's nothing I need to do about it. And what's really helpful through emotion coaching as well to enhance intimacy and teachable moments is to reflect on a time yourself when you were younger where you've experienced conflict with a friend, or you've been rejected from a job, or whatever it might be.
Yes.
So that it normalizes the situation and it helps them to realize that my parents have been through stuff too. And, you know, if you give examples of things that have helped you in the past, I would always preface it with, this might not help you in your situation, like, because it's not the same. So you're giving them the respect.
Yes.
And Gen Y and Gen Z, they value respect over anything else when it comes to communication. I'll often get together with a group of mums and young babies because I have a almost 2-year-old. And what I notice is that little toddlers often fall over and they bang their heads or they graze their knee or whatever it might be. And whenever that happens, of course, my own emotions are that, you know, my stomach jumps into my throat and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what happened? That was a horrible. You hear the bang, you know, the head on the floor, on the cement. It's not great.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you know it, right? Yeah. And so you have your own anxiety, but I'm very aware of my own emotions. So I will stop. This is where mindfulness comes in. I will stop and I'll watch him. And sometimes he'll get up, brush himself off, and continue playing.
Okay.
And
yes.
I'm in complete shock.
Yes.
Yes. And so then I don't say anything. I don't comment because he's obviously fine and he's decided that. He didn't look to me to check. And then other times he'll fall over. I'll wait. I'll watch. And then all of a sudden the tears, the waterworks, the screaming. And so then I'll go over to him and I'll pick him up and I'll say, oh, Bastian, what happened to you? Did you fall? He hasn't got many words at this point. Did you fall on the rock? And so I tell him the whole story. Oh, you fell on the rock and then look, you hit your head.
Yep.
Oh, that must be really painful. Did you hurt yourself? Yes. Oh, what do you need me to do? Would it be better if I kiss it better? Would you like me to kiss it better? And then he might just nod at me and then I kiss it better and then he's fine. He runs off.
The magic of mum's kiss.
Mum's kiss. It's perfection.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it doesn't work that quickly. Sometimes I need to cuddle him for a little longer. But if we're thinking about emotion coaching, we're not dismissing the emotion.
No.
Even if the fall is a small fall, if he's decided that it's a big deal and he's having a massive reaction, I will still treat it based on his reaction,
okay,
not based on what actually happened, because I'm validating his emotion and I'm showing that I'm there with him in his emotion. And then we're coming up with ideas together.
I'll get back to the time thing, and you're spending the time when you might rather be chatting with your mates,
yeah,
rather than dealing with this stuff.
Yeah.
This is not, though, you're all right when he's not.
No, exactly. And what I often hear parents doing, and you can understand why they do it as well, their child falls and they can see very clearly that it's not a bad fall, but the child's making a big deal of it. And you can see parents say, oh, you'll be fine. You're all right. You're all right. So the child's upset. The child is distressed. They're learning about their emotions and their mum's saying that they're fine. It's a very mixed message. They're going,
yeah,
so it's fine to feel sad. It's fine to be in pain. So it's actually not hard to switch the language around and say, oh, you fell. That looked like it was really sore. Did you hit your head? And that's it. If you think of the brain as two different parts, we have the frontal lobe and we also have the limbic system. We need to learn how to harness the emotion so that the emotion center doesn't make the decisions about our actions, but rather the logical part of our brains that holds our value system, that makes the decisions.
Wow.
So if you know how to harness your emotions, if you know how to manage your emotions, then you're in a much better position to allow your frontal lobe to make these decisions.
How clever are you? So how do we teach this to children then, Christine?
So I love this. I love teaching this to children because with adults, I would be telling them to do mindfulness. I'd say, go on to actmindfully.com.au, get the CD, etc. But with children, their imagination and their visualization is so good. So I get them to lie down. I get them to close their eyes, imagine beautiful garden. I go into an awful lot of detail with all of the senses, so sight and smell and sound, etc. And I get them to imagine a big balloon. And they can make the balloon whatever color, whatever pattern they would like, and to put all of their feelings inside the balloon. So if they have feelings of sadness or fear or worry, they put it in the balloon. Balloon gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we do some deep breathing. And with every breath out, they imagine that the balloon is floating further and further away. So that's a nice one.
That's very cute.
That's a nice one. That's a mindfulness activity. The other one that I like doing, and I actually did this with a whole classroom of kindergarten kids the other day, is I got them to hold their hand in front of them and to take their other finger and just tracing the outline of their hand up and down each finger. And with each up, they breathe in, and with each down, they breathe out.
You know, I'm doing that. I'm just... breathing in.
Breathing in.
I'm mesmerized.
Breathing out. And I tell them to do it slower and slower each time. And it gives them a visual focus. It's very detailed. And that's something that I spoke to the kindies about to use when they've got big emotions. So it doesn't matter if it's anger or sadness or fear. Anything that's a big emotion, if they want to make it a little bit smaller, then we do that. And I very carefully do not use the language of getting rid of anger or getting rid of sadness, because having anger is okay. Having sadness is okay. It's when they're too big that they're problematic.
How genius. Here's my big question. Does it make much difference? I'm sure it does. In adulthood, mm-hmm. a child developed like this, mm-hmm. how different are they going to be in adulthood?
Well, the Dunedin Longitudinal Study, which is one of the largest longitudinal studies ever done, and that started in 1972 to now, they found that the number one predictor of successful outcomes in adulthood is self-control. But part of self-control is, of course, emotional control. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to know how to manage emotions if you don't understand them.
Yeah.
If you look at any of Brené Brown's research, she talks about vulnerability, and she talks about not being afraid of intense emotions, being vulnerable, being open. And you have to know how to manage emotions if you're going to go into that really deep space. She doesn't shy away from the hard conversations, and all of her research shows that if you are willing to go to that vulnerable space, you really forge intimacy with another and connectedness, and it leads to living a much more rich and purposeful life based on your own values. Mm. If you don't mind, I'd like to quote Brené Brown.
Yes, sure.
She says, "Vulnerability sounds like truth, and vulnerability feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they are never weakness."
What a powerful quote. I feel like writing it down and just going away and thinking about that.
If we think about emotions as energy, we've got to convert this energy to something constructive rather than destructive.
Yeah.
That's why emotion coaching and EQ is so important.
I'd imagine there are many people, say in public life, that mm-hmm. you could point to, mm-hmm. to demonstrate how this kind of vulnerability and emotional intelligence does actually work.
Yeah, there's someone that comes to mind quite quickly for me, and that's Nelson Mandela. This is a man with incredible passion and energy to fight for equality during apartheid. In the first part of his life, his emotions and his anger had limited guidance, so much so that he had been labeled a terrorist by some
groups.
Yep, sure
was, yes.
He actually ended up in jail. With maturity, with life experience, and with self-reflection, he learnt to harness his anger and his passion for the benefit of the greater good, becoming the president of South Africa.
And a hero before the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. A role model to so many.
It took time, though, in his adulthood in jail, didn't it?
It took a lot of time. And I can imagine that in jail he had a lot of time for self-reflection.
Absolutely.
And to understand himself and how to handle his emotions for the benefit of the good, not just wayward passion that sometimes got him in so much trouble. If you don't mind, Lee, I'd really like to finish the podcast today by paraphrasing one of my favorite books by Richard Rohr.
Okay.
And the book title is The Naked Now. Suffering, of course, can lead you in either of two directions. It can make you very bitter and close you down, or it can make you wise, compassionate, and utterly open, either because your heart has been softened, or perhaps because suffering makes you feel like you have nothing more to lose. It often takes you to the edge of your inner resources. We must all hope for the grace of this second path of softening and opening. My personal opinion is that this is the very meaning of the phrase, "save us from temptation." We aren't asking to avoid suffering. It's as if we were hoping, when the big trials come, don't let me turn bitter or blaming, a temptation that leads to so many other temptations.
Imagine that world where people are living that.
If we can live in authenticity and in grace, not afraid of who we truly are, then we can truly live with love.
Oh, what a wonderful ending to a great conversation. Christina, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Lee.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. You can find a range of resources on parenting on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.